You're now listening to the Engage the Rockies podcast, your go-to podcast for local and state issues concerning Colorado.
Hello, Colorado. This is the Engage the Rockies podcast. I am your host, Jarvis Caldwell, Executive Director of Engage the Rockies. Today, we are talking gun legislation going through the Colorado legislature. And there's no one better to join us than Mr. Ray Elliott, Vice President of the Colorado State Shooting Association. The Colorado State Shooting Association is the official state association of the National Rifle Association. CSSA is an independent state organization led and operated by leadership elected by its members. Ray, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the invitation and looking forward to talking to you about what's going on in Colorado regarding the Second Amendment.
Absolutely. And so just for a little perspective and background for our listeners, so I worked in the legislature in the 2023 session. And I recall the narrative being at the time that the 2023 session was perhaps the biggest infringement on the Second Amendment that we had seen in the Colorado legislature. And now I think we only had six or seven, what you would consider gun control bills last year. And, you know, going through the bills this year, I mean, we're going to cover like eight of them today, but I actually cut out, I think, four or five or maybe more bills just expediency. So this wasn't a 5 hour long podcast. And so if last year we had six or seven bills and it was the biggest infringement, I would say 2024 takes the cake. And we've pretty much doubled what we saw last year in the legislature. I don't know if that's been your assessment, but
absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, say we were surprised only this being an election year. And so typically in election years, right, you don't have the type of bills that we're looking at in this legislative session during the election year. So it's really surprising to see that. And yeah, it makes last year's bills almost look like a Sunday school picnic. There was one bill in particular last year that was very egregious. And we are just adding on top of that bill, many other bills, and just very, very surprising, as you said. So no, 2024 right now takes the cake for the Second Amendment and the number of bills that have been introduced by far.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I know the bill you're talking about from last year. And if it is the bill, I'll mention it when we get to it. Cause I, if it's the same bill that I'm thinking of, it's back, put it that way.
It is.
And it's doing better than it did last year. Okay. So we'll jump right into it. I've got eight bills here. And like I said, in the opening that this isn't even all of them. This is just kind of some of the more important ones, that we should probably address. So we'll start with House Bill 24-1353. This is titled the Firearms Dealer Requirements and Permit. And this is concerning requirements to engage in the business of dealing in firearms and in connection therewith establishing a state firearms dealer permit. So if I understand this correctly, basically this is saying you don't just need a federal firearms permit to sell firearms. This is now creating a whole new state permit. Is that pretty much in line with
that? That is exactly right. That is exactly right. And some of the things that the dealers will be required if this were to pass is really egregious in many ways. But you're exactly right. It's basically a duplication of what is already happening with the federal firearms license, with the ATF, and just creates another whole level of bureaucracy for the state of Colorado, making it again more difficult on legitimate firearms dealers are going to have to comply with these rules. Even the large box stores are complaining about this because they're going to have anybody who deals with the firearms. I think one of the amendments that was offered yesterday was that only people that are selling the firearms will have to have background checks. But now they will require any employee selling firearms to have the background check. And if there is any, if the business does not comply after the first time, there's penalties that they'll get hit with. And if it happens a second time, they will lose their license for a fairly lengthy period of time, which basically puts people out of business. And one of the other things is, so you have the large box stores, right? And by the way, the cost of this license is significant. It's like double what the cost of getting a federal firearms license is on an annual basis. If I understood correctly, when I heard some of the testimony yesterday, federal firearms cost about $200 initially, and then about $90. I don't remember if it was every year or every 3 years. This bill is going to be $400 a year. And then you have this entire bureaucracy being done. That $400 a year isn't going to begin to fund what is needed and what will be required to be able to review things. And so who are the people that are going to be affected? Well, it's going to be everybody, anybody who buys a firearm, but small custom shops will be put out of business. They're not going to be able to handle this with the cost of that. Again, having background checks on their employees. And then one of the things that, was heard over and over again, clerical errors could result in people losing their license where something didn't get checked. And who's going to ultimately pay for all this? As we know, businesses really don't pay taxes. They pass it on to the consumer. So at the end of the day, all of us that are law-abiding citizens are going to wind up seeing increases because the cost of labor will go up, the cost of licensing will go up, the cost of regulation will go up. And what's that thing we hear in Colorado? The unaffordability of the state. Right here is a bill that really makes this more difficult, which ultimately is what the intent of the drafters, of the sponsors of the bill are, is to make this more difficult for people to be able to obtain firearms on a legal basis. And the sad part is the bulk the bulk of the of the issues related to firearms are not legal guns. It is guns that are stolen. And that's going to be a theme you're going to hear as we talk through these bills.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you'd mentioned a fine, if I read the bill correctly, it's a $250,000 fine for, I think it was the first violation is what it seemed like. I mean, $250,000 for the first violation of this. That, I mean, you know, yes, maybe Shields or somebody could afford that, but is your local mom and pop shop, you know, firearm store going to be able to afford that? There's no way.
Not at
I mean,
all.
That's
no.
basically to me when I read that, I go, okay, so the intent is to put all this red tape, and the first time you make a mistake, now you're out of business, right? $250,000, you're out of business.
Yeah. Okay. And it's funny, even the folks from Murdoch's and Baumgar's and places like that testified and had concerns about this bill. It's worse than what would happen if the FFL came in or the ATF came in looking at your FFL license. The penalties are way worse than what they would have from an ATF violation, which is really, really sad. So,
I mean, that's crazy that, usually federal is where you think like the harshest you know, penalties would come from, and nope, leave it to Colorado to make it worse.
You got it. Exactly.
House Bill 24-1349, Firearms and Ammunition Excise Tax. So this one is scheduled for the House Finance Committee on April 1st. And so basically tax revenue from this bill will be used towards crime victim support services, gun violence prevention, safe and lawful gun use, and enhancement of school safety. Now, my initial impression when I first heard this, so basically it's going to be an 11% tax on the purchase of firearms and ammo. And then when I read what the tax revenue was going to go towards, you know, crime victim support services. And so my initial impression was, wait, so when I buy some ammo or a new firearm or something like that, I'm paying an extra 11% on that. And that's in order for the state to take that money and then go use it towards crime victim services. So it's, essentially, I am being forced to pay for the actions of criminals when I'm buying something legally. Is that kind of a fair take on it?
Yes, it's very fair. And you're going to see, Jarvis, as we talk through these bills, it's like the responsible, law-abiding citizens are the ones that are getting hit with this. And you're going to see the reverse, that criminals, instead of us, you know, really wanting the criminals to pay for the crimes that they commit, that we're actually pushing that back to us as law-abiding citizens in several of the bills we'll talk about. By the way, this is a duplication of the federal excise tax. We already have a federal excise tax on firearms, on ammunition. And now we're going to put it on top of, and again, who is this going to affect? You and I may be able to afford it. It may be an inconvenience for us, but those that probably need the protection the most, single moms, right, that may be struggling to make ends meet, are now, if they want to get protection, they're going to have to pay a higher price for that firearm. They're going to have to pay a higher price for ammunition. And those are the people that can least afford this type of stuff. Here, the one side of the aisle will say that we're here to help the guy that's kind of disadvantaged and on the downside. And that is not the case. It's going to actually hurt those people. And when you look at the number of new people obtaining firearms, so on and so forth, it's minorities, it's women, mm-hmm. it's people like that where the bulk of that increase is happening. And if they don't have good jobs, have fun with this. And how are they going to protect themselves? As we said, crime is an issue in this state right now, in the metro area in particular. And now you're not going to allow people to be able to purchase the things that they need to protect themselves. It just, again, just goes against every grain in our body with
yeah,
what they
absolutely.
Want to do.
And I mean, 11%. 11% is not nothing. I mean, if you're buying a $1,000 handgun, which it's very easy to do, you know, because your handgun's range, but $1,000 decent handgun at 11%, you're talking $110 extra for that firearm.
Yep.
And that's on top of the taxes that you're already paying for it. So yeah, that's absolutely going to price people out.
Yeah, you still have sales tax and everything like that. Right. You have to put on top, and by the time you're done, it's going to be a significant amount.
And which your, is your background check.
Firearms
obviously.
Already. Yeah, yep. Firearms are already, you know, relatively, they're not inexpensive depending on what you go with. If you want a reputable firearm, you're looking at $400, $500, $600 for a minimum amount, right? And then if you want to have anything specialized added to it, just going to add on top of that. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and especially if you're talking handguns, you know, you usually get a holster with it. You buy some ammo, you buy some carry ammo, then you buy some range ammo. And so it adds up pretty quick. And then, like you said, you already have taxes on it. You already have to do the background check and everything. So yeah, it's going to add up, and it's going to hurt the people who probably need it the most.
You know, exactly.
And the criminals aren't paying 11% tax when they buy it on the street.
No. How are they getting those guns? They're stealing them from the guy that already paid it, so they're not paying anything for it. Exactly.
Yeah, right.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
It's a tax loophole.
That's right.
Okay. House Bill 24-1270, firearm liability insurance requirement. I knew this was going to come eventually. So for the listeners, this is assigned to the House Business Affairs Committee. There's no scheduled date as of, I believe, this morning when I checked it, concerning a requirement that firearm owners maintain liability insurance, and in connection therewith, requiring insurers to make coverage available in homeowners and renters insurance policies for damages resulting from accidental or unintentional discharge of a firearm. Okay. Do you want to kind of give us your thoughts on this one, Ray?
Absolutely. So this is forcing those that own a firearm to purchase insurance for a constitutional right that they have.
Right.
Okay. So this has huge problems as it is. It gets worse, Jarvis. In addition to that, the insurance currently does not even exist.
Right.
So anybody that owns a firearm at their home, whether it be a shotgun, a handgun, a semi-automatic pistol, they're going to basically become lawbreakers automatically and put us into a status of second class for doing all we're trying to do is protect ourselves. And by having that firearm at our house, how are we supposed to get the insurance? Again, we talk about affordability aspects. This is going to get added if homeowners policies decide that they want to cover. Can you imagine what the cost of this potentially will look like in something that they have not even delved in prior? This could significantly increase the cost of homeowners insurance, which again, those folks that are renters insurance as well, right? If you have renters insurance, you're going to have to add it to something. So this is just a horrible, horrible idea. Again, trying to make it that folks cannot legally own a firearm and really infringing on the constitutional right and something that is just incredibly egregious.
Yeah. And so a couple thoughts on this when I read this. So, and you touched on it, at the beginning there that, you know, it's requiring you to have insurance for a constitutional right. And so I'm like, okay, well, let's see how we can apply this to some other constitutional right. So I started thinking, I was like, well, you have a First Amendment right to free speech. Well, it is possible to say things that can hold you legally liable, that you could be sued for and stuff. Well, we don't have to carry around insurance to have free speech, right? When we can be sued for what we say, you know? And so I'm like, okay, so maybe we need to pass insurance for free speech because there's legal liability there when you use free speech. And then, you know, I can't help but think I don't know if you recall, there was this pet registration bill that started going through the legislature, like right at the beginning. And it was like, you know, for every pet you have to pay a certain amount. And so I'm thinking, okay, if I own, you know, 8, 9, 10 firearms, which I do, is my insurance going to say, okay, for every firearm you own,
yes,
that increases the chance of something happening, even though you can only use one firearm at a time, right? But for every firearm you own, that's increased liability. So, you know, if you have 10 firearms, your insurance is going to be significantly higher than if you just have one firearm. And that's something I'm concerned with. And because like you said, that insurance doesn't exist right now. So, you know, and we're going to be at the will of the insurance companies. You know, I always hear politicians knocking insurance companies, and now basically they're saying, hey, you know, good luck, because now the insurance companies are basically going to have a say over how many firearms you can afford to have.
And Jarvis, I'll tell you, I have a daughter who lives in Salt Lake City, outside of Salt Lake City, Utah, in West Point, Utah. Our house insurance right now is so much more expensive than surrounding states. What I'm paying for insurance, now again, I have a little bit bigger house than they do, but it's over four times what they're paying. I was amazed to hear what they're paying. And if you remember back, go back 5, 6, 7 years ago, what house insurance costs and how much that has gone up in the state of Colorado. And then you're going to throw this on top. One other thing I do want to bring out on this bill. So people will have places they can call. There's a company called US Law Shield or USCCA, right? That, hey, if you have to discharge that weapon, it kind of provides legal services to you. And they may think that, hey, that's good. That's good. That's going to cover what this issue is. It does not. That is not what they're referring to. It literally is insurance, not legal stuff, but actually insurance you have to buy. So if you have some type of a policy that covers you from a legal standpoint, should you have to discharge a firearm, that is not what this bill is going to do. It literally will require you to find insurance, as we said, that does not currently exist.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I
agree.
Yeah. I wasn't surprised to see it, but yeah, it's when you really start thinking into it. I mean, to me, it almost seems like a poll tax, right? Like poll taxes are not legal, right? Because you have a constitutional right to vote and they're basically taxing you, charging you to exercise that. Well, firearm insurance is the exact same thing. They are charging you to exercise your constitutional right.
Yeah. And you know, one thing I'll add here is my representative, I live in one of the more conservative, and I know you may laugh at that, in Denver, but we have one of the more conservative. We have a lot of firemen, a lot of policemen as well that live in our area. Mm-hmm. We're relatively conservative, but we have one of the most progressive legislators. So I'm in House District 1. Javier Mabry is the gentleman that represents us. I know we know another name by the name of Elizabeth Epps, and he has basically replaced her, I think, on the Business Affairs Committee. He's also on the Judicial Committee. Just unbelievable the things that he's trying to push. And we call it progressive. I don't like that. Let's just call it what it is. It's socialism. Mm-hmm. It's tyranny. Local elections really do have impacts, and people need to understand, right? When we have people in here that want to take away our freedoms, which is what the Democrats accused Republicans of in the past, that's not what's happening. It is the Democrats taking our freedoms day by day in these bills that are being passed and taking away constitutional rights. We're not even talking minor things. We're talking relatively major stuff that is occurring and very, very scary for what's going on in Colorado.
Yeah, and it's moving extremely fast. That's the thing, right? It's a lot of times when you start seeing these types of bills, you know, you might see one this year and it's a big fight, and then you see another one next year. Well, it seems like over the last 2 years, like I said, I worked in the legislature 2022 and 2023. 2022 was what it was. There was a few here and there, but 2023 was just, you know, an avalanche compared to 2022. And then I don't even know what's bigger than an avalanche, because that's what 2024 is. So, I mean, it is really, you know, rolling down the hill.
Pretty remarkable.
And picking up speed. Yeah. And so you can't help but think, you know, what is it going to be like next year? And you mentioned this earlier. This is an election year. Usually in election years, the strategy of political parties is to pull back a little bit, because they're like, we don't want to be too controversial. You know, we don't want to have that, you know, distract, or we don't want to give the other side ammunition to use against us in an election year. And it's like, no, that whole thing's out the window. Now it's just like, you know,
yeah,
push everything all at once. Okay. So moving on, Senate Bill 24-066, Firearms Merchant Category Code. Concerning a requirement that certain businesses with relationships with firearm merchants use the appropriate merchant category code. Now, this on its face kind of doesn't seem like much, and maybe is more of a, like, it's talking about category codes for, you know, a certain industry. Now, I will tell you that when I read this, and this passed the Senate, it fully passed the Senate, and it passed the House Business Affairs Committee on March 27th, which we are recording this on the 28th. So that was March 27th was yesterday.
Yes.
So
yeah,
it passed the first hurdle in the House, and it's already passed the Senate. But when I first read this, it reminded me of a debate that I had heard a couple years ago at the federal level about firearm companies or gun stores and things like that being affected with banking institutions, basically. Like, they're categorized as something, and that cut off certain financial access for them. And so I can't help but think of that. Am I on the right path there with that?
Yep. And in fact, so merchant codes are currently used. If you go to, let's say, a Shields is a good one down there. Mm-hmm. You have one in Colorado Springs. If I go into a Shields store, and I purchase something with a credit card, it's going to be labeled that I bought something at the sporting goods store.
Right.
What this bill will do is break it down. Okay. So if I went and bought dog food, or if I bought ammunition, it's all going to be labeled the same as sporting goods or mm-hmm. shirts or whatever it may be at that store. But now what will happen is, if I went and bought firearms, or if I bought ammunition, that's going to be coded differently. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that information is going to get fed, and they said they're going to look for kind of extraordinary situations, but extraordinary is not defined, or right. unusual situations, right? You can go spend a lot of money on a rifle, $10,000, $11,000 on a rifle, and it's mm-hmm. going to look like, wow, what is this guy up to? What's he doing? And that's right. not specified in this bill. And obviously, one of the concerns that people have is this idea of registration, right? And this feels mm-hmm. like, hey, we're slipping down a slope of registration. And what happens before gun confiscation? They want to know what guns that you have. Well, mm-hmm. Jarvis, one of the legislators, Representative Clifford, as testimony was happening yesterday, mentioned, so I don't know, and this is a quote directly from him, so I don't know that we are looking at some newfangled database that just specifically to create something to identify who has a gun. We have that. That exists. That exists in many ways. Okay. Did you yeah. catch what that legislator said?
Right.
There is a database yeah. already that has, okay, I don't know if this, and I don't know Representative Clifford, but I don't know, is he tragically unintelligent? Okay. Mm-hmm. Does he have no clue of the bills that he is voting on, or are the state and federal government in violation of their codes, the second, the fourth, the fifth, and the 14th Amendment by creating this database? This is right. not something that is allowed. This is one of the tenets of the Second Amendment. And here right. he is saying, and he goes on further to say, we have that information. So he's questioning why people are concerned about registration when he already believes it exists.
Yeah.
This is scary.
Yeah. Yeah,
but again, a constitutional right, and now right. you're saying we have the databases. So obviously, this is something that needs to be followed up on to find mm-hmm. out, hey, does this really exist? Because this is against violation of both state and federal laws.
Yeah, yeah, it's like I don't know Representative Clifford myself. I don't know if he was a new appointee. He or she was a new appointee or something. Maybe for a vacancy, but it is, I guess the question is, do they know something we don't know, or are they just misinformed?
Exactly.
And they just think, well, you know, there's universal registration in Colorado, so there has to be some kind of database, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting one that I hope gets followed up on.
Exactly. Flushed out. Whatever. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And again, what we're looking at here, second class citizens for those that decide to purchase firearms, right? It's like we're trying to separate. And this just brings me back to, divide and conquer. To the extent they can divide those in our country, then the powers that be that want to turn us into the nation that we're currently not, but they want us to become, which is a socialistic, communistic country, where now you have a group of individuals dictating what you can and cannot do. And that's fundamentally, I think, one thing, right, where we talk about limited government. We don't want the government involved. We want as little government as we can. We believe that there is a purpose for government. But the more government begins to intrude on our daily lives, on our constitutional rights, right, that's tyranny. And there's people that come from all over the world. Why are the people leaving Venezuela, illegal immigrants, and wanting to come to this country? Because of that exact issue where they don't have a say, they can't voice, they don't have free speech. It's very concerning.
Absolutely.
And as you said, how quickly Colorado has moved that way. This has happened right in the last, I would say, 5 years that we've really gone so quickly over to the dark side.
Yeah. Well, and especially when you consider, was it 2012, I believe it was, or 2013, when there was actually a recall of two legislators, and I think, and then one resigned on top of that. So like three legislators lost their positions at the Capitol because of the magazine capacity limit.
Yes.
And so I'm like, well, that just happened, you know, 10, 11, 12 years ago. And like, it was such a big deal to limit magazine capacity that it cost three legislators their jobs. And now it's like, well, magazine capacity limits, that's small fish compared to all the stuff we see going on right
exactly,
now. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And it's like, and nobody's
that's
losing
right.
their jobs over it, you know?
No.
Okay. So this is an interesting bill. So House Bill 24-1162. This is actually a bipartisan gun bill by Republican Representative Ryan Armagos and Democrat Mark Snyder. And, you know, it's one of the very few bipartisan gun bills, and it died in committee. You know, I found that interesting. But it's penalty for theft of firearms. And it says, in current law, the sentencing structure for theft, except for auto theft, is based on the value of the item stolen. The bill exempts theft of firearms from the sentencing structure and makes theft of a firearm a class 6 felony, regardless of its value. And then subsequent violations, including multiple firearms stolen in the same criminal incident, are separate class 5 felonies. So just reading that, I go, okay, wow, we're taking we're taking the criminal side of it seriously now, because it doesn't matter if it's $100 gun or if it's an $1,000 gun. If you steal a firearm, you're going to be charged with a felony, right?
Absolutely.
And so that seems like a good thing, because we were talking earlier about how criminals don't really care about these laws. Well, maybe if they don't care about the laws, maybe they'll start caring when they start facing more jail time, more serious penalties, and things like that. Am I on the right track with that bill?
You are absolutely on the right track. Making stealing of firearms a felony. Does that not sound like a common sense solution when we say so much of the gun violence, 95%, maybe even a higher percentage, is with guns that are stolen? Why would we not make it more difficult? Which now goes to the heart of the issue. Are we really trying to stem gun violence? Again, killed in committee. So I would say that the committee members are not interested. By the way, bipartisan. I think that's important to point out, Jarvis, as well. You had a Democrat and a Republican coming together to try to pass common sense legislation to make it more punitive on the people that steal the firearms. And what did the legislature say? On a partisan vote, we're not interested in stopping gun violence. We're more interested in stopping responsible gun owners and law-abiding citizens.
Right.
Okay. So everything they're saying, they're speaking out of a different side of their mouth. And this would have been a great bill. We were incredibly supportive, thought it was a wonderful thing to do. to make it, hey, you steal that firearm and we're going to go after you to the fullest extent and make sure that this is not just a minor crime, that this is more of a major crime. And our legislator says, yeah, no thanks. So who are we really helping here?
Right. And like when it comes to the value of guns, it's like,
doesn't matter.
You know, I agree with this bill in the sense that it's like, well, it doesn't matter whether it's a $500 gun or a $1,000 gun and it crosses a certain dollar threshold. It's like if it's being stolen and then, I mean, you can assume if a criminal stole it, they're going to use it in some other crime or they're going to illegally sell it. And then that person might use it in a crime. And it's like, so does it really matter what the price of the gun is? Does it matter if it's $400 gun or $1,000 gun? Like that shouldn't matter at all. It's the fact that you stole a firearm, which is going to lead to other things because you're a criminal because you stole it in the first place. So you're either going to use it in a crime down the road or you're going to sell it to somebody who is. So to me, just the outside looking in, just your average citizen, I'm like, this seems like a really good bill because if you want to take crime, especially around firearms, seriously, you need to start actually holding the criminals accountable and punishing them. And
spot on.
I hope this bill Absolutely. Comes back next year.
I agree. I completely agree with you. Yep. And, and again, just getting more bipartisan support, putting more pressure. And one thing I want to say, you know, a lot of people are like, they've thrown their hands up in relation to the stuff. Like it doesn't really matter what we say. Our voice doesn't matter. They're going to do what they want to do. I think the comment that I make is, and I've responded and sent to all the people on the committees on numerous occasions this year in particular, just because there's so much. I've sent them what I think about it. And I realize that at times Javier Mabry doesn't care. He doesn't want me to own a gun. He doesn't want me to have the ability to protect myself, so on and so forth. But I still have a responsibility for my voice to be heard. That is the system we're in. Okay. Mm-hmm. And again, he's not going to follow what I want. I want him to know. And I think that is our responsibility. That's how we begin. And if everybody who felt the way that you and I feel on so many of these bills expressed their opinion, the legislatures would have no option but to do the right thing. And with so few people responding, and I realize in this case, there's hundreds of people who have responded. I'm not talking hundreds, Jarvis. I'm talking thousands and tens of thousands of people that are impacted by this bill. I would assure you they would start to think a lot differently because when one person takes the time, they realize there's probably hundreds of other people, maybe even thousands of other people that feel that exact same way. And you have to put the political pressure on them. That is all that they listen to at times.
Yep. Agree with you on that. Okay. We have three bills left. House Bill 24-1348, secure firearm storage in a vehicle. This is an interesting one. I feel like I've maybe seen something similar to this before. I don't know if something similar passed recently in the last few years or if they tried to. But so this bill says the bill prohibits knowingly leaving a firearm handgun in an unattended vehicle unless the firearm is stored in a locked hard-sided container that is not left in plain view or that is in the locked trunk of the vehicle or a locked recreational vehicle. Okay. If I'm understanding this correctly, it's saying if you have a firearm in your vehicle, it's got to be in a like locked container. Now I know most people like myself, I'll lock it in the glove box or I'll put it in my, center console or something like that. I mean, here's the thing is, there should be nobody in my car, right? Because if you are in my car without my permission, then you're committing a crime already. So, average citizen here, when I read this, I say, okay, this isn't focused on the criminals. This is basically making the law-abiding person a criminal if they don't, you know, properly store their gun in their car. Am I on the right track there?
You are spot on. And taking this bill, and I'm glad you put it in this order, right? Bill 1162, penalty for theft of firearms, which was killed in committee, right? That was to penalize the criminal, which we said, nope, we're not doing that.
Right.
Now we want to penalize Mr. Responsible Gun Owner, law-abiding citizen. And this whole thing of I place it in some hard-sided container in my vehicle. Jarvis, okay, so I hide it. Somebody breaks into my vehicle, that does not stop them from taking that hard-sided case out of the vehicle and then going somewhere and prying it open and having that gun. This bill is a solution looking for a problem that does not exist. Okay, if you're stupid enough to leave that vehicle in plain view on your seat, okay, you're an idiot, all right? You're just a plain idiot. You don't do that. That may be a right of yours, but it's not something you're smart in doing because you're an attractive nuisance at that point where somebody sees it. Oh, man, I want to get a hold of that.
Yeah.
Storing it in your glove compartment, storing it in your center console, storing it in your trunk when you're not in the vehicle makes all the sense in the world, and you are already locking the vehicle. This is absolutely dumb. By the way, there are other people affected. And again, this is what Metro Denver politicians don't realize. What about rural Coloradoans? He's out on his 100-acre, 1,000-acre thing. And you're telling me that he has his rifle there in the front seat, and now he's in violation of the law because it's not locked up, and he may need that to ward off a predator of some sort, a bear, a mountain lion, a wolf, right? Whatever it may be, we're making these people – and again, we're going to hold these people accountable. Let me ask you a question. When a pharmacy drugs are stolen from a pharmacy, do we hold the pharmacy responsible for the theft? We don't. And you could apply that in many different situations. This is ridiculous. Again, second-class citizens. And here we say, oh, yeah, Mr. Criminal, we're not going to come after you and make it a felony. We're going to be nice and give you a little slap on the hand for having stolen a firearm that will probably be used in a further crime. And you, Mr. Law-abiding responsible gun owner, because it wasn't put in a box, a hard-sided box, which accomplishes nothing, we're going to now come after you.
Yeah, it's
what in the world are we doing here?
It's like, hey, you know, make it easier for the criminal to pack off everything all together by putting it in a nice gun box. That, you know, I'm just thinking, I'm like, well, and usually in most cars, like if you know a gun box is a pretty good size, like you can't necessarily slide it under a seat or something like that. So, you know, where do you put the gun box at? You're going to have to put it on the seat or in the floorboard, and it's going to be in plain view. And so somebody looks in, they see a Sig Sauer gun box, and they go, oh, hey, look at that gun box there. You know, when the way I do it is, you know, I've got it in the center console. You know, I'll tuck it down in there, maybe put some paper over it or something, you know, if I'm going to leave it for a while. And it's like, it's way better hid. You know, I'm not putting it in a nice travel case for a criminal to pick it up and walk off with it.
Walk away without people even realizing potentially what it is versus he breaks in, he takes his thing, and now he's got to figure out something to do with it on his body or whatever when he has a firearm or whatever. Yeah, it's just again, it's just a feel-good bill that actually is just, again, holding gun owners responsible. Yeah.
Yeah, just and wrong. You said it, the car itself is locked, right? Like the car itself is locked. So they're already committing the crime when they break into it. I mean,
that's exactly right.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Okay, prohibiting carrying firearms in sensitive spaces. This has been very big one. This is probably one of the most talked about aside from the last bill that we're going to talk about. So this is Senate Bill 131. This bill prohibits a person from carrying a firearm, both openly and concealed, in public locations specified in the bill. A violation is an unclassified misdemeanor punishable by a maximum $250 fine, except that a second or subsequent offense is punishable by a maximum of $1,000 fine. So basically the crux of it is this bill is going to outline certain places that you cannot carry a firearm, whether it's concealed or not. And
that is correct.
I don't have the list here in front of me, but I'll let you expand on what the list
is.
Or, yeah,
absolutely. And there's some good news, relatively good news. I mean, again, horrible bill, basically going to not allow, initially was not going to allow concealed carry in many, many places, almost outlawing concealed carry altogether. There were very few places you could carry it in your house, but almost anywhere else you carried it, you would be in violation of this law. That did get amended. The bill did get amended. And again, in keeping with the Braun decision, historically sensitive places have been official government buildings, legislative offices, and polling places. Those were the three exceptions allowed in the Bruin decision. Mm-hmm. One of the big issues that happened in this bill was the higher education. CU had a policy before the preemption that you could not carry a firearm on the CU campus at any of their campuses at all. When Colorado passed the ability to concealed carry and basically made all municipalities, all jurisdictions follow the same rules and regulations, CU had a problem with that. Well, what's been incorporated in this bill is you're not going to be able to carry concealed carry within schools as just a regular responsible law-abiding citizen within colleges either. Okay. And what we've seen as we watch this, that we believe that it still will allow staff members to carry. So there's a group called FASTER that trains school teachers and staff to be able to carry in schools. I think one thing most people are not aware is there has yet to be a school shooting of any kind where the school allows their staff to be able to concealed carry. Okay.
Yeah.
This bill, fortunately, from what we understand, now again, understand that the two amendments came through late last night. I was actually coming back from Virginia yesterday, listened to this, heard the amendments. They didn't even have, nobody was able to read what the amendments were. We're still looking at those issues to find out what it is. We do think this bill is less bad than what it was and that it's eliminated a lot of stuff. But folks, one of the big issues we have in Colorado is all the school shootings that have happened. We're like the first in the country with Columbine, right? And they all have a common theme, no guns allowed within school. And which is why this group FASTER came about, was to have people armed. You look at so many of these situations, by the time the police are able to respond, the active shooter situation is typically over with. Whereas if you had people on premise that actually have the ability to whether it be a citizen or whether it be somebody who's gone through the official training, you're actually in a much better spot. Where I feel less safe is knowing that there's places where they say these are gun-free zones. Because to me, that invites a criminal to be able to come in. So this bill was just a horrible, horrible thing. We've seen some modifications and changes to it. It now, since it's passed the Senate committee, is on to the committee of the whole, as you said. So the whole Senate will be voting on this. Still more work to be done. And hopefully we can get this thing killed. Because we believe as an organization, as people that advocate on Second Amendment, any place you put that restriction – that responsible gun owners can no longer are no longer allowed to conceal carry guns, we're putting the public at much more harm. I mean, just look at all the situations that happen where somebody who just happens to have a gun is able to take down an active shooter and save and prevent many, many deaths from happening. This stuff will absolutely hurt that, no matter where it gets passed.
And something, so it's something for people on the eastern slope. That maybe they don't think about it as much, but I know a lot of legislators on the western slope, and it's very rural, and they're like, you know, their schools are so spaced out, and their law enforcement offices and things like that, you know, where their police stations are, or their sheriff's stations, they're like 40 minutes away sometimes, and so they really, really rely on their teachers going through like a FASTER Colorado with Laura Carno. And first off, cause it's kind of two issues there. The first issue is they just can't afford security there because of budgets and things like that. They can't afford a full-time security officer with a weapon. So they really rely on having staff members and teachers, administrators, whoever they decide carry, because they're like, well, we can't afford a security officer and the police are 40 minutes away. And so, I mean, this is literally the only way we have protection. And if a bill like this passes, you're just leaving us unprotected, completely unprotected.
Yep.
I think that's something that people, especially in Denver Metro or Boulder, places like that, they just, I don't think they think about that, right? They think the entire state of Colorado is like Denver, and it's like, no, it's actually Denver's like its own thing. Like,
if you talk to the bulk of the police officers, even in the metro area, their response time, right? We're talking still minutes, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes to arrive. And those active shooter situations are typically relatively short periods of time where they do the carnage and everything. Look at what happened at the King Supers in Boulder. I mean, a very unfortunate thing, but those police responded as quickly as they could. But unfortunately, the damage had already been done within that facility. Even when law enforcement arrived, boom, one of the first guys to arrive was shot dead on the spot, which is really, really unfortunate. And again, you know, when we look at this stuff, I understand, hey, I'm relatively new to being a firearm owner. And if really, why have I gotten engaged in this? Because I have kids and grandkids, and I want to make sure they have the ability to protect themselves should the need arise. And, you know, one of the things, Jarvis, that you learn when you go through the training to get your concealed carry permit, which I did, was that firearm is the last resort. You are only doing that when there is no other option to escape, to protect, to stop the threat, basically. I'm not even necessarily there to kill the person. I just want to stop their threat of what they're going to do to me, to my family. And I hope I never, ever have to use it. But you know what? I can sleep at night knowing that I've got it available to me should the need ever arise. And God forbid that it should. I hope it never happens because it would just be a really awful situation.
Yeah, it's the saying that I always come back to, which is better to have it and not need it than need it and not have it. Right?
I totally agree. Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right. I saved the best for last, and we're running about 45 minutes here, and I want to respect your time. So House Bill 24-1292 prohibit certain weapons used in mass shootings. It passed the Judiciary Committee. It's scheduled for House floor work as of today, actually. House floor work is I don't know exactly what they plan on doing today on it. That's just kind of a generic scheduling House floor work. Usually you have like second reading, third reading, things like that. So we'll see what they're actually doing on it today. And it's probably literally happening right now as we're recording this. So the bill description is concerning prohibitions on certain firearms used in public mass shootings. Now I'm trying to think back in 2023, when pretty much the same bill ran, I think it was called like prevent mass shootings or something like that.
Yes.
I remember I referred back. So I wrote an op-ed in 2021 after the Boulder shooting, and I called it banning assault weapons. I use it in quotes. Banning assault weapons will not stop mass shootings. And basically I go through in this op-ed and I outline that some of the most infamous, shootings, mass shootings in the history of America weren't done with semi-automatic rifles, right? And the first one that comes to mind is Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech, the shooter used two pistols, if I'm not mistaken, and he killed 32 people. And these were 32 college-aged people, you know, not elementary school kids or something. These are older people, and he killed 32 with just two pistols. So I remember thinking to myself when 2023 came around, they ran that bill and they called it prevent mass shootings or something. I was like, well, that's most mass shootings are done with pistols anyways, right? Because you look at what the definition of a mass shooting is, it's federally, I think it's two or more, or three or more, three or more people injured in a shooting. And I'm like, most of those are done with pistols. A lot of times it's in like, you know, gang warfare and stuff like that. And so, when we talk about preventing mass shootings, you know, I'm like, you can ban semi-automatic rifles. It's not going to stop mass shootings. But I know there's actually more to this bill because there was a leaked draft in 2023 that came out. I don't know. We had nothing to do with leaking it, but a leaked draft came out, and it basically, the way it read, it was like, this is not just going to ban rifles. This is going to ban everything. And then there was a revision of it. And then the real one, you know, the actual bill got introduced. What does this bill look like right now as far as what it's actually prohibiting?
This bill is very, very similar to what occurred in 2023. There's a lot more pages to the bill where it goes through specifically and identifies all sorts of firearms that will be that will not be able to be sold. And I think the reason why the authors did that is to make it look like these are the only ones that you cannot buy, so that people would look at this and say, well, there's probably a lot that you can. Unfortunately, just because it's called something different, it is still very much the exact same bill. And one of the key terms in the bill is any firearm that can accept or easily be modified for external ammunition feeding device, which basically applies to virtually every type of firearm that's available. So window dressing in what they've done. And just to talk a little bit about the whole testimony. So they listened for 12 hours. I got to listen to a good portion of this. That was 12 hours of people that were in the chamber at the Judiciary Committee to testify. Online folks, They only got through the A's and B's and part of the C's, and the bulk of the testimony was in opposition to this bill. This would literally wipe out the 10 most popular firearms that women would buy. They're no longer going to be available if this bill passes. The bad news is, Jarvis, as you said, last year, this bill got killed in committee, if you remember. It was surprising. We thought it might pass committee. This year, unfortunately, it went the opposite way. Yeah. And one individual I want to call out, because last year he voted against the bill, a gentleman we already mentioned earlier who is in bipartisan support of a bill that got killed, the one that was a penalty for theft of firearms, Mark Schneider. He was mysteriously absent and excused for this bill this year. He was a no vote last year. And this year he is gone. He doesn't show up. He's not there for the committee, which just raises a lot of red flags in my mind. He is obviously from your area in El Paso County, probably trying to say, hey, I didn't vote against the assault weapon ban bill, or I didn't vote for it.
Right.
So I don't know if he was pressured or what happened, but just a big issue. And again, this literally will put businesses out of business. Any firearm dealer is really going to struggle if this assault weapon ban does go through. Yes, as you said, it was scheduled for the House floor, I think, earlier, and now you're saying, hey, it's back on as of today on the House floor. Curious as to what's going to happen. This bill was, again, sponsored by two of the most progressive, Tim Hernandez, Elizabeth Epps, but it passed the committee. Obviously, it's one that has people very, very upset, but when you again, as we look at all these bills going on, I mean, this is just crazy, right? Not going to be able to buy a firearm, not going to be able to carry a firearm in so many places. If you do have one, you're going to have insurance. If you carry it in your car and it gets stolen, you're responsible now.
Right.
I mean, just amazing. The litany in an election year, folks, make your voice be heard. Know what the people, who the people are that you're voting for. Elections have consequences. And these people are taking it way further than we've ever seen anything happen in the state of Colorado before. And this bill is of major, major concern to every Second Amendment group in the state of Colorado. And it should be of concern to anybody who wants to be able to protect themselves. It is just unbelievable how far they're reaching with this. Again, just like they did last year.
Yeah, I mean, how far we've come where it was killed in committee last year. And this year, it was unanimous as far as party line vote, right? There wasn't a single person that broke off, you know, and it was like, because I was there. I think they voted on it in committee about 1 o'clock in the morning. And I was the comms director at the time in the House of Representatives. And so I had all my tweet and my Facebook post. I had everything ready to go, whether it passed or didn't, because I wanted to be the one breaking the news. And so, I was there. It was like 1:30 in the morning. And then, you know, it was interesting. I think the governor had a lot to do with that. There was a lot of movement in the committee and people getting pulled off the committee and put in. And, you know, like there was a lot of curious stuff going on at the time. And, I guess what you could say is moderates being put, in place on that committee, because I don't think the governor wanted it to pass. Now the governor, as far as I know, the governor has not said anything publicly about it. And, you know, aside from, well, we'll see, you know, what happens in the legislature, but, he's going to have a very big decision. If the Senate doesn't kill this bill, he's going to have a very big decision to make, because he's Mr. Libertarian. And so how libertarian is it to start banning the most commonly owned rifle in the country? So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And if the Supreme Court takes this up.
Just to see, you know, right in between the two years, what happened, right? We had three Democrats last year, Mark Schneider, Bob Marshall, and a gentleman who's no longer on there. That's it. That was the gentleman who said nothing during the committee. I was there last year. And Jarvis, I didn't stay down at the floor the entire time. I actually came home and I stayed up the entire time for the exact same reason you did. So I wanted to know what the outcome was, because I invested quite a bit of time in this. It's a civics lesson, by the way, to anybody who's never had the ability to testify. Do not be nervous. Right. I was very nervous, even though I had been in city council before. I had never gone and testified before state committee. It was great to watch and then see all the interactions. You really get to see kind of inside baseball, so to speak, or inside the state capitol as to what goes on and what happens. And very, very incredible. And affects one of the sponsors, again, same sponsor of the bill this year. She is for an outright gun ban, Elizabeth Epps. Yeah. And I believe Tim Hernandez falls into that same category. She says it's the guns. It doesn't have to do with the people. It's the guns themselves, which I completely disagree with, because there's a lot of people killed by vehicles. Do we say it's the vehicle? It's the vehicle. No, it's the person behind the vehicle. It's the person behind the gun pulling the trigger that that causes the problem. And these folks are not, they don't believe that for a second. They want him gone. And they really want to undermine what we know as our republic, our democratic republic. They want it gone, and they want the government making all the decisions for you and I.
Yeah. Well, that's a great place to leave it off, Ray. We ran way over, but it was a great conversation.
I totally agree.
It was a great conversation, and I mean, we covered some of the big ones. Again, so the Speaker of the House and the Senate President, they have the ability to add bills throughout the entire session. So even though we covered 8 bills, I had to leave off, just for the sake of time, like 4 or 5 other gun bills. A couple of them are what I would consider pro gun bills. But you know, we don't even know if this is all of it, because the speaker, you know, tomorrow could say, oh, you know, she could authorize another bill to go through, because every legislator, for the audience who doesn't know, every legislator gets 5 bills, but the speaker or the Senate president, they can authorize additional bills as the session goes, which is why you end up with about 600 bills during the session instead of 500.
That's amazing.
Amazing. And so we don't even know if this is everything. They could keep adding them. But Ray, thank you again. And so Colorado Sport Shooting Association, or excuse me, I always say sport, Colorado State Shooting Association, website that people can go to.
CSSA.org. We were fortunate to be able to have a 4-letter website, and that's an easier way to remember it, because it's very easy to mess up what the initials stand for. CSSA.org. And Travis, if I can just put in a little bit of a excuse me, I call you Travis. I've been wanting to do that all day. It's Jarvis. I know that. My apologies. CSSA.org. We are an all-volunteer organization, and we advocate specifically in Colorado for the Second Amendment. The ways that we do that is number one, we have our voice be heard. We're sending out emails constantly to allow all those that are members in our organizations or our organization to make sure they're aware of what's going on, to have their voice heard. We advocate on behalf of the legislature, trying to get good people elected. The best way to stop these bills is to have good legislators in there that understand the importance of our ability to protect ourselves in the Second Amendment. I am a volunteer. I don't get paid for anything that I do. It is that important to me. I'm a grandpa. That's why I'm on here. But we have people from all different aspects, and we are fighting for the Second Amendment, and we are want to work with those legislators. When bad bills get done, we want to modify them. We obviously want to get them killed to the extent we can, but to have modifications done, if that's all we are able to accomplish, that winds up being a win. Last year, I think the biggest win in the legislature, one of the biggest wins, Jarvis, was that assault weapon ban, getting it killed in committee. This year, we don't have any that we can say yet. We're seeing modifications happen, but we definitely want to see some wins happen. Folks, it's important for you to have your voice heard. It doesn't take long at all to get in touch with your legislator, regardless of what they are, and just let them know you support what they're doing, or if you're opposed to what they're doing, let them know that as well. I think that's incredibly important.
Absolutely. That's great. A great place to leave it off, Ray. And I appreciate it very much. Audience, if you guys enjoy this, please share it with your friends. This is not going to get any better until people start speaking up and getting involved, like Ray was talking about. And so thank you again, Ray. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Engage the Rockies podcast, your go-to podcast for local and state issues concerning Colorado.